are over, and we'll continue our introductions.
Councilor Jeannie Stewart, Clark County.
David Nador, Clark County Councilor.
Tom Bilkey, Clark County Councilor.
Okay, this is your show, Oliver.
Thank you, councilors. What I would like to do this morning, this is going to be a team effort. I will open up with a very quick overview, and Cody will go over the CEPA process, and then we will be available to take questions from the council. As the board is aware, the council is aware, we have started this process since July of 2013. So this is an effort to really bring Council Jeannie up to speed as to what we have done to date. And Council Jeannie is very familiar with the state statute, so I won't go in depth in terms of the background because I know that you're very familiar with the GMS statute at the city level. It's not necessarily different at the county level, except that the county deals with the rural element, unlike the city.
Oliver, if I can interrupt you for a minute regarding the rural element, because we want to hear your presentation, but we also want to make sure, just get a heads up here, that we want to make offer a rural alternative in addition to what has already been presented. So we'll hear more about that. We want to make sure we see everything that you have here, and at the end, I want to be able to introduce that after the fact. So, go ahead.
We'll bring Councilor Jeannie up to speed, and maybe that will give us some different perspective on whether we introduce another alternative or not. Throughout this process, Council, we have been meeting with our city partners. As you are aware, we are supposed to plan in coordination with our city partners and other stakeholders. So all the seven cities in the county have been at the table from the onset. We meet monthly with them in our city-county coordination meeting. The statute requires, as you are aware, that the county plan and the city plans has to be coordinated and consistent. For that reason, we started the process bringing all these cities at the table. Throughout this process, the other city that is not here today is the city of Woodland. But it's my understanding that the consulting firm that Elizabeth represents also represents Woodland.
Yeah, we do. I work with Eric Eisen.
Microphone.
Short on microphone. Yes, I work with Eric Eisman, and we have been representing the city of Woodland throughout this comp plan process. However, due to the short turnover, I'm not here representing them today. That's not a priority.
So as FYI, we have all the seven cities in the county working with us throughout this process, including the city of Woodland, because there is some portion of the county land that is in the within the city of Woodland. As a result, they are required to plan under the Growth Management Act. Cowles County is not, but the city of Woodland is required because of the portion of some land in Clark County that is within the city limits of Woodland. So that's the background. So what I will do again this morning is bring the council and all those present today progress to date. I will also provide you some overview of the planning process, some key decisions that the council have made, which led us to the three scenarios or options that is slated to be published next month. Cody will then go over the CEPA review and provide you some updates, and both Cody and I and Chris Cook, our deputy prosecuting attorney, who's been advising us throughout the process, will touch upon some key issues and update the council on where we are. And then we will briefly get to the next steps. And if the discussion on the next steps gets to introducing another scenario, we'll have some discussion on that. So. Councilors, I indicated that throughout this process, you're going to be seeing this chart. It is our timeline for completion of this update. As the councilor is aware, this is not the first time Clark County is doing a growth management plan. We did one in 1994 to comply with the state statute that was enacted in 1990. Since 1994, the plan has been updated in 2004 and as recent as 2007. By statute, Clark County, in addition to other counties, I can't name them all, with the cities in them are required by statute to complete our plan by 2016, June 30th, 2016. In other words, the council has to approve a plan before June 30th, 2016. That's our deadline. And then thereafter, the county is slated to be updating, review and update every 7 years. It used to be every 10 years, now it's every 7 years. So we started this process July of 2013 with the fact that both Councilor Madore and Milky, even though Commissioner Milky was at the legislature when the growth management was passed, he hasn't really been at the county level to approve a comp plan consistent with the Growth Management Act. So we started with an overview of the GMA, what we are mandated to do, and we issued an issue paper. Issue paper one was the background that provided the GMA overview of what the county is required or mandated to do as a full-blown county planning under the GMA. There's some counties that are partially planning. Clark County is one of those that are fully planning under the GMA. Those that are partially planning under the GMA are limited to do critical areas and resource designation, not a full-blown GMA county. We also started a process to say we use the inventory of what is available in terms of what is developable. So we have a model that was developed very early 1990s. It's called the Vacant Buildable Lands Model that have been reviewed extensively and will withstand so many challenges both from the building industry and from the environmental groups. So that's the model that we're using. It's one of the best in the state. I'm very proud of that. So we reviewed with the county commissioners with the help, because that model is housed in the county GIS office. They manage it. I have no control over them. So it's an independent department that runs that model for the county and the cities. We reviewed that VBLM model with the council at least two times to be able to determine and agree on what is available for development. That was the purpose of doing that. So we can all agree whether we have sufficient land within the existing urban growth boundary to support the 20-year growth plan that we are updating this plan. We also provided the commissioners with a preliminary timeline, which is what this also represents, and presented again in an issue paper to the commissioners a public participation plan. We are required to have a public participation plan adopted by the commissioners. So we did one and prepared one, and it was adopted by a resolution, which I will point to as we go forward. In January 2014, up until now, we have started the plan review. We are required also to prepare what is called a commerce checklist. This is where we are supposed to look at, since 2007, what other changes have been made to the statute itself every time the legislature convened. So we are required to check and see what additions or amendments have been made to the statute itself and incorporate those changes as we update our plan to make sure that it is up to date and consistent with the state statute. In the state statute itself, so that checklist is going to go to Commerce by the time we finish this work. In it, we've identified the limit of the changes we are proposing to make, some relating to rewriting our policy, our document, and updating our Title 40 to be consistent with any changes we make to the policy document. We are required by statute to rely on the Office of Financial Management for the population that the council are supposed to choose for the next 20 years. So we've presented that to the council, and the council made a decision on what growth target or what population target to plan for. And this planning horizon is from 2015 to 2035. We also started discussion and review of the countywide planning policies, which you're familiar with, council, where the county and the cities all agree on regional issues and what the countywide planning policies for those ought to be. We then started a review of the growth trend and allocation after the council made a decision on both the population to plan for and the job targets to plan for. And that is countywide, both the county, unincorporated area, and all the cities, and also to some extent to the rural area. The county met Board of County Commissioners with input from the citizens and other stakeholders, including the cities. The county commissioners reviewed the planning assumptions and made some changes to the planning assumptions, which was the basis for where we are now. So the board adopted some changes to the planning assumptions, and we presented the growth allocation based on their previous decisions. Since then, we have been reviewing, we are required by statute to complete what is called the buildable lands report. That is where we work with the cities to...
Oliver, can you pause a minute?
Yes, sir.
You wiggle your cable onto your microphone. Okay, so it's not you. Chris, can you... Oh, wait.
Okay.
No, that's not you. Chris, can you do the same thing? Wait, only one thing, I think. Wait. This one? That's not it? Well, it's the phantom, so we'll live with it.
Okay.
We record this and put it on the grid, so if we have poor quality, and we disservice our citizens.
And I will try to, I will try my best to speak clearly. We are required by statute councils to develop what is called a buildable lands report. This is where we collect data from all the jurisdictions on actual development that have occurred on the ground, and report that back to the council and then submit that to the state. What that statute requires is if there are some trend that we see, we can use that to inform the council and the decision makers in making some adjustment in our planning assumptions going forward. So that report is due to the state June 2015. By June 30th, we're supposed to complete that report and submit it to the state. It's mandated that we do that. The council will see that. It's all the cities will see that. And the public will see that before we submit it to the state. So that's what we're working on.
Oliver, you said 2015. We have a report that is due to the state?
Yes. It's called the Buildable Lands Report. Buildable Land Evaluation Report.
And that report requires all of the work to be done by, I think it's ESA?
No, we are doing that internally. We don't find that out. It's done by the county and input from all the cities.
So if we add another option today, do we delay that or that doesn't?
We have no choice. We don't have to delay it. It's required to be done June 30th, 2015.
I got the date. The question is, if we add another alternative, do we impact that date, or is that independent of that?
I don't think it will impact the release of that report. It depends on the nature of what of alternative we're looking at, but I will say that I don't think that will impact the release of that report.
Thank you.
So that is being worked with also assistance from our GIS and our technical information department. They're all, it's a team effort. By the time we release the report, I think the decision makers will be happy, and I think the state will be happy to see our report as well. We are internally working on what we call technical reports. These are things that are more technical in nature, numbers as it relates to land use, and all the mandatory elements we have to have in our plan. So that work is being done by planning staff. We have come to, in progress, in terms of the plan development. We are at a stage where we are now ready to release the draft supplemental EIS, and Gordon will talk about that in depth, because of the decisions that the board have made and where the stakeholders, including the cities, are. At this point, we see no need to do a full-blown EIS, but the outcome of this work session today may be dead otherwise, and we will talk about that later. So that's the plan progress to date in terms of what we've been working on since July of 2013, all we worked on in 2014, and beginning this year where we are. As I indicated, the Road Management Act is codified in the Revised Code of Washington, RCW 36.78, and in it says that we have to have, by the time that the board makes their decision, they have to have what we call legislative findings. In other words, we have to show our work. And Chris will talk to that in depth. Our decision, our work, when I said our work, I mean staff, the stakeholders, whatever is submitted into the record, have to withstand any challenge. So we have to show our work. That is what is called legislative fighting. The county did this, or the town, or the city did this because, that because has to be ironclad. We are required and mandated by the state statute to use the OFM population, as I indicated. We are required to have a public participation program. That is, all this information is in our grid. We've identified the mandatory elements we have to have in our plan. We are required to, our plan is required to be coordinated and consistent with all the local jurisdictions within the county, and we have to oblige, we're obligated to follow the review and the schedule as specified in the statute. As I indicated, the plan update is due June 30, 2016. So the reason I make that point clear is that we are not doing the first comp plan for the county, and that's really, that point needs to be made very clear.
Oliver, I've got a basic question here. This is done typically every 7 years, is that right?
The state legislature changed the 10-year to 7, so now it is on a schedule every 7 years.
Sure. And I see the title of this is a 20-year comprehensive plan. That means we're just looking 20 years in advance. There's nothing special about this update compared to the previous updates?
There's nothing special, except you have to be able to see what changes have been made to the statute since its inception, and make sure that any time you update your comp plan that you're consistent with all the changes that have been made. A good example would be, it was only about in 2005, I believe, that the state legislature added the 14th goal, the shoreline, and we commenced with the cities to update our shoreline, so now we are now in compliance with the 14th goal of the Act.
One more thing, Oliver, clarification. Did you say the EIS is being done in-house?
No, sir.
Oh, okay.
The buildable lands report that is due to the state is done in-house.
Okay.
Yes.
And the ESA is our consultant?
On the CEPA.
Does that ESA stand for something?
Environmental.
Environmental Science Associates, I believe. Thank you.
Here are the mandatory elements. I'm not going to read this. It's very clear. It is very similar to what I have already gone through. I will only add that we have completed the Shoreline Master Program. It was very successful. The first time we did that and wasn't challenged. I commend Gordy and all the city staff that worked on that. And under the leadership of our former county administrator and Mark, the changes we've made recently to include Garden Lake was under Mark's leadership, and the cities of Richfield came along and were successful in updating the Shoreline Master Program. So as of today, I can report back to the council that the county comprehensive plan is currently in compliance with the road management. That's a key point to always stay with the council. As of today, the county comprehensive plan is in compliance with the road management act. Now, this update requires that we, when the council makes a decision on the 20-year planning horizon, we are obligated to make sure that there is sufficient land within any urban road boundaries, excuse me, to make sure that we have 20-year land supply to accommodate that. That's what we require as we move forward in this update. I'm not sure it's mine. Okay? It's yours?
Yeah, I don't think it's the mic. Sorry about the technical problems.
Okay. Now, these are the key decisions that the board have made to date. On October 9th, 2013 through March 19, 2014, at the board work session, the board reviewed the vacant and buildable lands inventory. At a hearing, January 24th, the board adopted appropriation forecast by resolution 2014-01-09. The board also, at that hearing, adopted a public participation plan. The adopting resolution is up there. April 1, the board adopted by resolution employment forecast for the 20-year planning horizon. July 31st of 2014, the cities and the county agreed upon
it was the agreed upon deadline.
It was agreed upon deadline for the cities to submit their request to the county. We had a work session with the board July 16 to talk about the CEPA scoping. We reported back to the council or to the commissioners on the outcome of that scoping. June 24th, 2014, you had the board hearing on population and employment allocation, planning assumptions, the board principles and values. Those decisions have already been made. Following up to September and October, we had another series of work sessions with the commissioners reporting back on the outcome of the CEPA scoping, and in it indicated that based on the decisions that the council have made, here are the three options or three alternatives that has to be studied, and at the end we'll move towards amalgamation of all those three alternatives based on comments received to get us to what will be the final option that will then be the purpose for your hearings. And then we had another
question,
yes.
It was do I understand correctly that La Center and Battleground are the only two cities that have requested their UGA to be expanded, and Richfield came in later, but no one else, right?
That's true.
They submitted that before that July 31st, 2014 deadline, those first two?
Yes, and I have a slide to show that as I move forward. These are just key decision data that up to date. That's why this slide is up here. So in terms of the CEPA process, which the council have seen this, again, if you recall, I made the comment that this work session is to bring Council Gini up to speed and use it to refresh the council where we've been and where we are and where we're heading. So in the CEPA process, we had alternative one,
which is the existing or no action alternative, the current comp plan, the current urban growth boundaries, the current policies, and Title 40 as it is today. So that's what Alternative 1 represents. In Alternative 2, represent using the new planning assumptions, policy directions, decisions from the board, land use, changes in land use, the principles and the values as defined by the board are reflected in Alternative 2. Alternative 2, even though we're calling it county-initiated actions, represent a change that we are proposing that be made in the rural element. That change is the first bullet, and you hear me say this, and I will say it today, I'm not sure what will happen with this proposal, but we are proposing, without changing the resource designation, to reduce the minimum parcel size for forest 40 to 20 and ag 20 to 10. And then, where appropriate for buffering purposes, reduce rural 20 to rural 10. That's what we are proposing to occur in the rural area. That will retain the current zoning outside of these three zones, the rural 5. In the rural centers, we're not proposing to make any changes to the rural centers, again, on the premise that the county comprehensive plan has been found to be compliant with the Growth Management Act. As Council Madam indicated, we are in Alternative 2 expanding at the county request to include the Tri-Mountain Golf Course in this alternative. It was not a request of the City of Richfield. We also are proposing to make a single rural land comp plan designation, so it will be much, much easier and flexible in the future when a request is made to change the zoning. You don't have to wait for the once a year complex process you go through. You can go straight to the hearing examiner and get that change made. The same is what we're proposing in rural commercial. We've made proposed some changes in urban reserve and urban holding. We are proposing to have a public facility zone. This cities have already done it. We want to do the same thing on the unincorporated portion of the county. This will facilitate where you have a park that have already been developed to recognize it as a public facility. That's what this zone will do. We're also proposing to have a single commercial plan designation. There's no need having multiple commercial zones. That leads to the once-a-year plan amendment and zone change that goes to the Planning Commission and then comes back to the Council. This will streamline that process and make it a process that could go to the hearing examiner, but they still have to meet all the criteria. So I see this as a plus. We're also proposing here just the highlights to remove the reference to the Three Creeks planning area. You know those Council no longer meets, and we've seems to have fulfilled the charge. We are also recommending to remove urban holding in some areas within the Vancouver UGA between Commerce and Vancouver. The city is on board on this. They see no impact on this. We're also proposing to for comp plan and zone consistency on our mixed use. We are proposing to make some changes that will come before the Council for your approval on the two sub areas that have been in limbo. This will be the Salmon Creek and the Fairgrounds. There are some material atlas amendments that will accompany this alternative 2 when it's complete. This is alternative 3. This is where we reflect what the cities are requesting. And as you mentioned, Council Maduro, only the cities of Battleground and Le Centre are requesting expansion. And the expansion is in line with the board principles and values to focus on adding, expanding the boundary primarily for jobs. So this is consistent. The two areas that both Battleground and Le Centre are requesting are primarily for job land or job producing land. In the case of Battleground, it's about 80 acres plus, and all of that will be devoted to employment land, employment use. Le Centre is asking for about 51, close to 60 acres, give or take, and all that will be devoted for jobs. Yes?
Before you change pages here, I just want to comment regarding the terms. We are calling this Alternative 1, which is no change, Alternative 2, and Alternative 3. The implication there for citizens that look at this would, the natural conclusion is that we would pick one. We either pick Alternative 2, 1, 2, or 3, and that they would somehow stand alone, independent. We have to choose A, B, or C. In reality, that's not the case.
That's true.
So probably a better terminology, the way I think of it, is that these are components. These are options. And each one, what separates them out is who is sponsoring those, who's initiating those. Option or alternative two, which I'll call option two, is initiated by the county, not by the cities. Alternative three is sponsored by, initiated by the center and battleground. But the assumption is that these are ingredients, they're all independently analyzed, and the final result will be a combination for some hybrid between them. So we don't have to choose between alternative one, two, three, four. These are all independently evaluated, pull together, bake the cake with some ingredients. These are potential ingredients.
That's correct, and you're right. Whether it's a choice of word, and when we do this type of thing, we usually rely on Mary Kells, our public information officer, director of our public information office, and she has suggested that we call it options. I'll be more than willing to call it options, but you're correct that the council is not bound by picking one, two, or three. What will happen is that these will be analyzed independently in terms of the environmental impact of each proposal. You will receive comments from the citizens at large, what they like about the three scenarios or options. And at the end of the day, we'll use those comments to get us to a hybrid of what becomes the final that will then be the basis for the final review and analysis again. And that final option is what you and the Planning Commission and the cities will be going to hearing on. So you're not bound by one particular option.
So the terminology that we're using, alternative, is not some standardized kind of language that we're, term that we're supposed to use. Because this is such a public process. It involves every parcel in the county, and the public process is really meant to engage citizens so they understand what's going on. So if there be a freedom for us, we will call it some more intuitive term, like option, I would think that would be helping.
Councillor Madure, I think that the word alternatives is used because that's the word that's used in the SEPA statute.
Right.
But an alternative is an alternative, even if you call it something else. So what you call it is a matter of your choice.
So we don't have the freedom to have a more citizen understandable term here?
No, we don't. Not under the law.
Yeah, we do. Okay. In my opinion, we do.
What is
it would be when it's analyzed, it'll be called for legal purposes an alternative.
That's what I mean. Yes.
And as long as it is an alternative, you can call it whatever you want.
Right.
So interchangeably, even if we stay with the official terms of alternative, we can interchangeably use option or component or whatever we like to refer to. Okay.
Yes. And if I may, commissioners, I think, I don't want to put you on the spot, but I think at some point we need to have a resolution or a response from the county relative to the request from Richfield. I will turn this over now to Gordy to walk the council, go over the SEPA review and process in terms of where we are, and finish the presentation and the update before we start taking questions. So, Gordy, I'll turn it over to you.
I do have one question, even though, sorry,
you with that slide right there. This isn't due to be turned into the state but until 1 year later, June of 2016. Why are we wrapping this up in 2015, a year ahead of time? Is there something that we're allowing extra processes that need to happen between there?
No, Councillor, we established a timeline with a consultant based on the work that's been previously done, as Oliver has pointed out. You gave us the marching orders in August to hire a consultant. You gave us the alternatives in October and February. That's 5 months. This is the time when the consultant has been working. This morning we just printed off the preliminary draft supplemental EIS. Here it is. I'll be reviewing this, and as you can see by the first circle, I guess they call that a circle. I'm not really sure what that shape is with an arrow. The preliminary drafts, or the supplemental draft, is to be scheduled, at least today, to be released in 2 weeks, and we will be noticing that. That's our schedule. Let me back up a little bit just to provide some additional background information. In 2007, we studied a huge area because the proposal at that time was to, we ended up adding 12,000 acres to urban growth areas around the county. That's 19 square miles, roughly. Some of that was, about 4,300 of that was agricultural area. And so the environmental impact statement covered an area that was greater than that by a few thousand acres. Of course, as we all know, 2008, 2009, the recession hit. The impacts that were predicted over the remaining time in the 20-year program, which is for us is 2024. In other words, the impacts that were projected in the 2007 EIS haven't happened, and we didn't get the growth. The growth rate dropped off here. We were looking at a proposed 2% growth rate for that period of time. Up until 2024, we've barely gotten back now in the county to, I don't even think we've hit 1% yet. So to make a long story short, when we fast forward to the next update, as Oliver said, 7 years later, we're now taking another look. When we did the vacant buildable lands analysis, we still have most of that land is available to be built on. And so through the vacant buildable lands model runs, again, with information from the building permit data that we get from the cities, we said we think we've got quite a bit of land left, and based on the population that you picked last summer and the jobs target that you picked, we've got pretty close to the amount of land still inside of urban growth areas to accommodate growth out to 2035. And so based on that decision, we said, well, we don't need to do another full environmental impact statement because we already did one in 2007 that looked at how that land would be if it was fully urbanized out to 2024. If we're planning for about the same number of people, the impacts are, by extension, the impacts are going to be the same. So we said, well, what are the things that we want to do for the 2016 update? We'll just prepare a supplemental environmental impact statement. Just as a bit of background, between the 04, the 2004 comp plan update EIS cost and the 2007 EIS cost, the budget for that was about $600,000 for a full-blown EIS. But again, we were adding 12,000 acres. That's quite a bit of land. So given that the county is not proposing to add anything this time other than the Tri-Mountain Golf Course, and the two areas that the city are proposing to add, that is Prattville Grand and Lewis Center, those two areas, all three of those areas, were studied in the 07 plan. So we said, great, we'll just tweak, if you will, the 2007 document and prepare the supplemental. And that's where we're at. So we're not doing a full-blown EIS at this point, and that's based on the decisions in your direction from last August and last October that Oliver just reviewed. So, as I said, we have three alternatives going forward, or options, however you want to call them. We use the term alternative because that's the word that's in the law.
Right.
And the State Environmental Policy Act uses that terminology. The no action, what we're calling a county-initiated actions, and then we went to the cities and said, so what would you like to see? And that's where we got the request from the city of Belgrande and from the city of La Center. So our schedule going forward at this point, the draft is scheduled to be released in 2 weeks. We have the notice prepared. We have a notice of joint hearing prepared. So February 4th, that's 2 weeks from today, the draft supplemental EIS is to be released. February 19th, which is a Thursday, I think that's 4 weeks from tomorrow, there's a joint council planning commission public hearing that will be held on that document. We are required to have a 30-day comment period. So March 6th would be 2015 would be the end of that period. And we'll prepare a final supplemental that has the preferred alternative, which will be probably a conglomeration of all the alternatives, depending on the comments we get and how you want to proceed. And that's scheduled under what we're thinking today, our current schedule, to be released sometime in May or June. So, yes, Councilor.
So looking at that time frame, we're due to be done a year early.
We're due to be done with the environmental process. We still have quite a bit of work to do to get before we're done with the analysis. We have to do capital facilities plans based on the preferred alternative. Staff is working on rewriting the comprehensive plan document itself and its text. That has to be completed. All the technical reports that Oliver referred to, which is the supporting documentation, the show our work piece, those haven't been done. That work has to continue. That'll be anywhere probably 6-8 months.
Title 4.
We have to look and see where the county code needs to be amended. We know of at least one place where we want to amend the code. So there's still plenty of work to be done. It's just that we're getting the environmental review out of the way, what looks like a year early.
And certainly that extra work that needs to follow this is internal work. It's not necessarily all this public involvement process that's going to somehow change things.
No, it's very much public.
It is public.
So it is continuing to be public.
Sure. Anything that involves adoption of changes to Title 40 or changes to the comprehensive plan itself.
Yes.
And the technical reports need to be part of the record, so right. They would need to be presented to the councilors publicly, and so that there is an opportunity for the citizens to be heard on all of those things.
Sure. Right. So the analogy here, I look at June 2015. At that point, we will have decided what's going into the cake. Well, that's the time to bake the cake. We're not going to change the recipe.
That's correct.
Okay. So
we have to do then the supporting work around that.
If we're going to add strawberries to the cake, we have to be able to somehow not let that happen, because we would end up having to restart the whole process and bake a different cake, which means if we're going to consider, we'll leave the door open for a rural alternative and additional ingredients. Strawberries to the cake, that we have to insert that process as soon as possible. February 4 is, in other words, this is on autopilot. We'd have to say, hold the presses. We've got to be able to consider some other ingredients here that we may be able to define so that somehow we don't lock ourselves out. So I just want to understand the process. Certainly we want to get it done, and certainly we don't want to delay things, and certainly we want to be able to support the staff, and there's a lot of work to follow. Got all that. But also we want to make sure we take the time to do it right there, because there are there's a significant fourth alternative that I don't want to close the door on. We want to make sure that we have that opportunity to include what no lost opportunities here.
I think that's the end of the presentation in terms of the EIS. When we get to next steps, of course, we'll need to figure out if we want to add something to the document that's proposed to be released in 2 weeks. Then, depending on what that is, we're going to have to figure out what that means. So whether there's how much time is associated with that, if it's a major change, and I'd be major, in quotes, major change, whether that means we can no longer issue a supplemental, we've got to do a full-blown environmental impact statement. We just don't know. Then there, of course, will be a cost associated with that. So all these things will need to be thought of when we know what it is that we might be adding to what we're currently proposing to do.
Are you finished?
No.
Do you want me to? Yes. Let's move on a little bit here and look at, we listed kind of the 2016 review and update. This is by way of review. So we're keeping the current urban growth areas for residential use because we believe that there's an adequate land supply supports the Office of Financial Management population forecast. And we do have this outstanding Ridgefield request that hasn't been resolved to my knowledge. What we're not doing is site-specific annual reviews or dockets. There's the resolution that the board adopted, 2014-06-016, that suspends annual reviews and dockets while we're in the comp plan update. As I just said, we are not preparing a full environmental impact statement. We have already readopted the 2007 document and said we're just going to update it with a supplemental. So, and at this point, we're keeping the current resource land designations as the county's plan designations are GMA compliant. As we said earlier, this is a key point.
What to demise?
And we're also keeping rural densities at Rural 5 zoning, which is one dwelling per 5 acres. Again, the county's rural densities are GMA compliance, and non-conforming legal lots are recognized within Title 40. So if you want to jump in on the maps?
I think if you look at the first bullet, we've received comments, and I think legitimate comments and concerns that in their perspective that the county resource designation was flawed, maybe it's a strong word, and that it needs to be revisited. I went back and I asked our GIS, and Ken is here, to touch upon that, at least in terms of the mapping that was done, and we relied on the best available soil information. If you want to go back to 1972 or whatever, since then, that soil information or layer has been updated with additional information from DRL and soil scientists. It hasn't changed significantly. So these two maps here, really, if you get up and look at it closely, it will show you the 8 soil class that we are required to use by WAC, and other criteria specified by CTED, whether the property is in current use, adjacent land use, look at it area-wide. Those other subjective criteria were all considered. And if you look at where the county designated as ag and forest, you will see that it complies with the work factors, if you will. And I said that not to minimize the concerns that CCCU have raised, but I said that with confidence because the commissioners is aware as early as 2007, when we did the last update, we brought about 4,700 acres of ag designated property into the urban growth boundary. We were challenged using the same information that we now heard that is wrong. So that challenge we lost, both in Lagler, we lost in La Center, we lost in Washugo. Arguing now that that designation is all based on wrong information, I have difficulty comprehending that even where I come from. So these two maps represent the best available information, the best soil layer. If you match the designation of resource, ag, and forest, and if there's anywhere that is off there, I will be the first to say we make the changes. But there is none. Secondly, when the plan was prepared in 1994 and was challenged, including the Rural 5 zoning. Yes, there was some down zoning that occurred in 1994, no doubt about it. But that has withstand all the challenges up until now. So whatever direction the board wants to give us, your call. But I will, with consultation with our legal folks, to make sure that what staff in our professional opinion are presenting to the county commissioners or council is what in our professional opinion we believe is consistent with the state statute. We are a full-blown planning county under the GMA. The GMA changed land use planning in the state of Washington. We have to recognize that. It did. Until it's amended, that's what we got to plan under. If the board believes that we don't have enough alternative, the cities are here, that changes all the previous decisions that you made. Whatever you direct us to do, we are your staff, but we have to be able to tell you whether that is consistent or going to be consistent with the state statute or not. Your call. So that's what these two maps represent. And the last bullet there says, to date, the county resource and rural designation are found to be GMA compliant, both by the growth Western Washington or now consolidated hearings board and the courts. And Rich and Chris may correct me if I'm wrong, but that's the last final order from the growth board following the appeal says that the county comprehensive plan now is in compliance with the state statute. So there are some other issues that the board have been made aware, you may hear, and that is coming from DEEB, that we change the infrastructure deduction of how much land is set aside for road and parks and so forth. I will submit to the council, and I put this chart up here, slide up here, that we are keeping the current infrastructure deduction. Why? In 92, if I may go back as far as 92, when we started having this discussion on infrastructure deduction, there were we settled on residential between 25 and 40, depending on acreage, and commercial and industrial was 25%. We, in that plan, we agreed with the environmental and the building industry to have some measures or some benchmarks that over time we will come back and see how well we are developing and use that to inform us what we are seeing. So when that report was completed in 2000, we found that indeed our previous assumptions did not hold up. We are seeing that infrastructure, road, sidewalks, you name it, parks, were coming in around 27.5% in the residential development and 25% for commercial. We also did another report in 2009. All this was sent to the state, and we also showing, based on actual development on the ground, that residential infrastructure dedicated is coming in around 25%. Industrial were coming in close to 20%, and commercial was coming in under 8%. So I asked independently our GIS staff to run a series of study, if you will, on actual development that have occurred, even though we haven't seen significant change due to the slowdown in the economy. And Ken is here, he can report on that. And his analysis came down below 27.5%. So I have no basis, if this is going to be data-driven, I have no basis to change the current 27.7%. I asked the cities, you know, show me, what are you seeing? They all reported back to me that they're seeing less than 27.7%. They're all here at the table. So that's the argument that I'm making to the commissioners, to keep the 27.7%. Put in the plan to be monitoring what is actually happening on the ground. If in the next go-round you're seeing something totally different, you use that as the basis to make changes to the planning assumption. That's what I'm presenting to the board. I think this will withstand any challenge. Gordy can go through the next steps. I've already alluded on this, but I'll let Gordy walk you through this because this is an area that he knows more than I do.
Just by way of review then, this is our ultimate slide. The draft SCIF is scheduled to be issued on February 4th. That's 2 weeks from today. You have a work session, which we can choose to hold or not hold. That will be up to you on February 18th. That's a Wednesday. That would be on the alternatives. The joint hearing between the council and the planning commission is scheduled for Thursday, February the 19th. The 30-day comment period on the draft SEIS is scheduled to end on March 6th. The buildable lands report, again, as Oliver alluded to, is the draft will be available on May the 20th. There'll be a series of work sessions and on the comprehensive plan, the plan text. Any code changes we need to make pretty much through the summer and into the fall. Am I getting ahead of myself here?
No, that's
It says final SCIS completion in September. That's actually not true. It'll be done in June or July. We do have to give Commerce a 60-day notice, just like we would do for a development regulation. They would send out the document. That has to be done before the board takes final adoption. And then final adoption would be, again, more open houses, planning commission hearings, deliberation, recommendation, board hearings, deliberation, recommendation, and we have to have all that completed no later than May. June 30th.
We've got to be finished in May.
2016. So there's no reason not to get done early, but we don't want to be late. So in terms of the schedule, we're kind of laying this out as best we can for the next year and a half. So
move on. Okay.
Questions?
Okay.
Yeah.
If we approve this today, if you can consent this today, then essentially we will have locked in concrete this plan, close the door to a rural alternative, and set in motion these milestones that will exclude alternative 4. Correct?
Correct.
Okay. So I'll give my fellow counselors the opportunity to be able to share here, but it's crucially important that we as representatives of the unincorporated areas especially, that we listen to them. And I have Peter has done a lot of work with rural citizens, and the intention here is to leave the door open for us to work with staff to bring what has been up to this point generalities and define them to specifics so that we can identify what is actually legally defensible and logical and reasonable for us to be able to add these options, the extra ingredients before we bake this cake. And it's obvious that cannot happen with this time frame. Certainly the insight that is provided there with the draft EIS, it is a draft. It can give us insight, but I just want to make sure that we're aware, at least that you're aware, I haven't talked to my fellow counselors about this yet, to ensure that this is a very important thing. We need to leave the door open. This will shift the schedule, and we have to include the rural citizens in this process. They haven't had a seat at the table up to this point. So I'm not talking about major things, but I'm talking about adding an additional option that we will define with staff between now and then. And it will be very tangible. And Chris, Oliver, you've been gone for a month, Oliver, and I haven't been able to work with you. But there's a lot of homework to do, and I've got a to-do list to make sure that I fulfill my responsibilities to work very closely with you to bring definition to alternative 4.
Counselor, just one issue. I would not agree with you that the rural citizens have not had a seat at the table. They've been seated at the witness table on virtually every public hearing that you have had for more than a year. They have met privately with staff. They have met with the commissioners. In terms of ensuring public participation, that particular group of the public has been about as active in participating as anybody in the county. And to say that they haven't had a seat at the table because the decisions that the Board of Commissioners made did not accommodate their alternative is not legally correct.
Okay, let me just define terms, because certainly I don't want to understate it or overstate it. I'll say that. I'm really speaking just literally, because we have staff here, we have consulars here, we have representatives from each of the jurisdictions and the cities here, but we really did not have a citizen that could serve as a representative of the rural citizens physically at the table. Today, we have, I've invited Dr. Don McIsaac to be here and have a seat at the table, just because I've been working very closely with him, very helpful to help us bring definition to this. With that, if you want to have an opportunity to say something, just welcome that.
Thank you, Councilor Mador, and maybe if I could ask just a couple of questions. Originally, the purpose was to help the new commission, the new councilor here understand, so perhaps there's a couple of questions I can further that a bit. And let me just say again, thanks for the presentation. The materials that are on the website that people can track is quite good. But a question about the schedule and the hardness of the deadline, and then a question about the rationale for the rural changes that are in alternative two. So on the schedule, on the screen here, we see the final adoption. That's clearly a consular decision made in public.
Yes.
From legal counsel that these decisions are to be made after public comment, public comment forum. That one looks like that did occur. There's reference earlier to a decision made on October 22nd in a work session that did come to a surprise to a lot of folks in the rural area. And it's not apparent that that one was done with public comment in a public session. And of course, this one today, at this work session, there isn't a public comment period. So, in terms of going back to one of your other slides where it said a final or a preferred position and determined by June of 2015, this upcoming June. It's not clear whether that decision is going to be made in public after hearings in the public. Councilors can consider public opinion before they choose. So we have a little bit of concern that the original selection of alternative two wasn't done after a public comment period, or if there's a change today that's formalized. There isn't a public comment period. We do understand, we don't know about what's going to happen in June, but we at least understand that the very end in June of 2016, the final does. My question, I guess, with regard to the hardness of the deadline is that it must be done by June of 2016. What happens if that schedule isn't achieved by then? This one on the screen now for June of 2015, with the challenge to come up with a preferred alternative that gets finalized. What happens if that slides to September?
I can answer your question about what happens if the June 2016 deadline is not met. And that is that the county is automatically out of compliance with the Growth Management Act. The statute is very clear that the deadlines for completing comprehensive plan updates are required to be met in order to remain in compliance. What does it mean to be out of compliance? It means, for example, that the county is ineligible to apply for a number of aspects of financial assistance, some of which are involved in public works. And GMA has provisions in it that state that if the county's out of compliance at a particular time, but it's adopted comp plan update, even though it's wrong, is not effective until it goes through the appeals process and is found to be effective or becomes compliant, then the county may retain that eligibility. But if you just simply fail to get it done on time, you would be ineligible. The county would be ineligible to make those applications.
With regard to sliding the CalSTRS decision on a preferred alternative, a hard deadline or one that could slide if there were consideration of other alternatives?
I can say that could slide in terms of the June 15 final EIS supplemental. But I will caution that it depends on what the fourth alternative that Councilor Mador is talking about. If he leads us to do a full-blown EIS, then that could slide further. I'm sure that we will be able to meet our deadline. I don't know where the cities will be on that, and I don't know, you're taking a risk. I don't know whether you will get a support from the cities or other stakeholders. You have more than one. This is the process that you go through. You don't have one stakeholder, you have multiple. So if you ask us to start building on a fourth alternative, it may require us to, depending on the magnitude of that, to go out to scoping. I don't know what the timeline is going to be on the scoping before we can even arrive on what that looks like in terms of a land use map that someone can do an analysis on. So I caution the board in terms of moving in this direction because you don't know what's going to happen. I can tell you that it could take us 2 months, 3 months to come out of scoping on what this fourth alternative is going to be. It's not only the rural folks that weigh in. The cities will have to weigh in on how it impacts them before we can arrive on what that alternative is going to be. And that's the one that we have then to send to our consultant to do the environmental impact study. And if they come back and say that it has to be a full-blown EIS, we will come to the council and determine what's the cost for to do so.
Thank you, Oliver. I hope to hear from some of the rural folks, since obviously that we're out of time. I would encourage or consider a continuation next week of this work group. I feel kind of pushed on the hardcore drive that we have here. I feel more comfortable if we had another work session. Thing that we don't know what we're going to get into. We don't know exactly how much more we think we could change. And without knowing that, we don't know how much we would be required to adjust the EIS. Hopefully, the changes would be somewhat minor or not effective to the point that we'd have to do a whole full-blown EIS rather than a supplemental. So my position is that I think we need to come back to the table here.
Okay.
Yes, just one more quick question. Your slide 9, with an alternative 2, you are proposing some changes for the rural folks.
That's correct.
Could you speak to the rationale? You mentioned a purpose for the R20 to R10. I don't quite get it, but also your rationale for the forest 40 to 20 and ag 20 to 10. What is the rationale?
If I could interrupt you for a minute. Those questions they're already answered there in that draft document you have in front of you, right, Gordy?
No. What the rationale was for these?
I don't think so.
I don't think so. I'd be happy to explain.
Okay.
Back at the end of the 2007 comp plan update, the board at that point basically said we need to take another look at rural lands. And so within a couple of years, the Rural Lands Task Force was created. And it took us, in all honesty, a while to figure out with the board what it is that they meant by a rural lands review. And we still have a website on the Clark County Community Planning page that says rural lands review. one of the things that the Rural Lands Task Force came up with was they wanted to bring the cluster ordinance back to resource lands. We had a cluster ordinance at one point. It was repealed shortly after the first county plan was adopted under GMA in early 1995. As part of the Rural Lands Review, we hired Burke and Associates out of Seattle to say, what's happening with ag land and forest land in the county? What's going on here? Give us a situation assessment. What are the trends? And they put together a situation assessment that shows that there's lots of land being farmed. There's more farms actually than in 2007 and 2012, the U.S. Agriculture Farm Census, than there were in 1997 and 2002. Although I think they changed the definition of farm, which may be the reason for that. But the Rural Lands Task Force came in and said, you know, I've got 80 acres and I have six kids and I'd like to split it six ways. Can we do that? And we said, no, you can't legally do that. It's an 80-acre minimum. So what we attempted to do, or are attempting to do, is to say where it makes sense, and of course we have to show our work as to why it makes sense. Would it make sense to reduce the minimum parcel size for, in this case we picked ag 20 to ag 10, and it'll be more difficult to do from forest 40 to forest 20. As a small step, as a small consideration, something we could do for rural property owners. So what we have to do is to say, be able to show our work that says, if we're going to create twice the number of lots, for example, if you assume that everything that's ag 20, and we know that's not the case, goes to ag 10, if we went from ag 20 to ag 10 and ag 40 to forest 20, we'd get about not quite 1,800 additional lots. The question we have to answer is, how does that further the GMA requirement that you preserve or protect resource land for resource use? But what we're doing in this, again, for the environmental impact statement part of this, just looking at what are the environmental impact, what would be the environmental effects of doing this. And the reason R20 to R10 is here is Rural 20 was put in 1994 as a buffer between resource areas and smaller rural parcels. And if we went from Ag 20 to Ag 10, and Ag 20 is next to a 20-acre rural parcel, it wouldn't make much sense to leave it as 20 acres. So we would also apply where it was appropriate to take rural down to 10 acres as well. That's the rationale behind this. So I believe it, as since I was staff to the Rural Lands Task Force, that we're pulling a thread of what they were interested in, even though it's not exactly what they proposed. We're pulling a thread of what they wanted to see forward and getting it. The board has agreed and we've gotten it into the one of the alternative two ideas for this comp plan update.
Sure, and I found it just compliment that a little bit before we wrap up, because we're way over time. We need to wrap it up. The federal census that looked at the trend within the farming, what's happened in our community, the basic rationale, as I see it, for the more manageable sizes is that the intention, one of the prime intentions, is not just simply to set aside, reserve it, and either fallow and somehow abandon that land for some future time, but to really recognize the commercial significance of productive ag land that can actually produce food and products, and productive forests can actually provide viable products that would provide the economic development and the best and highest use of the land. And that is, the assumption there is that if you have large parcels of land, if you have full-time stewards who don't work elsewhere, that is their full-time job, especially on the ag, to produce that. And that's over time that has changed. The manageable productivity of land, those that can bring products into our farmers market and that kind of thing, works so much, has changed over time so that if it's more manageable, it won't sit fallow, but people will actually be able to do something with it. And just with that, the outcome from this meeting, we don't need to define what is alternative four. The path forward that I'm asking for is to hold the presses, to already assume that we are going to make the 2016 deadline. That's a given. We need to comply. We're not going to slip that. But we have one important ingredient to add to the cake that needs to be defined, and we cannot agree upon the locking that this the proposal today into concrete. So the flexibility needs to be added there. We're very closely with staff intently over the next several weeks, and then bring this back.
Councilor, we need the board's direction in one respect. The board did approve a $100,000 contract with the consultant that is due to release a supplemental EIS on February 4th. The board did that with this kind of schedule in mind, having approved it and been through it. The question is, should we now tell the consultant to stop work?
As I understand, the work that the consultant is doing must be done to examine alternative 1, 2, and 3. And if we add an alternative 4, that alternative 4 is additional work that can be added after this. And there's nothing that would somehow cause us to hold the presses on the work on 1, 2, and 3. So no, I wouldn't think that we would stop the work, that we would get to the point where they've done all that they can do on the alternatives that are defined, but somehow not communicate that that's the way we're going to bake the cake. We need to somehow communicate that there could be an additional ingredient that we're leaving the door open for. And if when it comes to the definition of that alternative four, if we arrive at something that has enough specifics to it and we agree upon that, then there will be a follow-up that will make a decision as a board to consider that consultant doing the environmental work for that as well. But that's a future decision that's predicated upon the discovery process that will have to happen over the next several weeks. Okay.
I think I want to really zoom out here and talk about the purpose of the meeting today. Is to simply update. And as you know, I've had some prior land use comp plan experience. So, for the purposes of that, thank you for organizing it. And it does help me put in the time frame what's already been done. So, I'm going to go out on a little bit of thin ice here. The assumptions for jobs and housing, is there any chance to revisit that? Because those were done months ago, some agreement was reached by the commission. And I have some concerns about the jobs projection and the population projection.
Well, Councillor, those were assumptions that were adopted in public hearings. Those decisions are very, very fundamental to pretty much anything that happens with the comp plan update. And if the council chose to review those once again and to make changes, that would have to be done in concert with the cities, because the city's urban growth areas are dependent upon those things and their zoning is dependent upon those things. That would be a significant process, and at that point we could throw away the SEIS because it is dependent upon the already adopted.
Okay.
So it's a possibility. It would certainly have ramifications.
Yes. So then, if we discover 2 years from now our jobs or our population is increasing faster than we anticipated, or that due to housing we have a need for more jobs, are there supplemental plans that can be submitted, or is this a start over?
That's an interesting legal question, and I say that being the person that was kind of screamed at by a court of appeals judge who said, so what, in 2004 they adopted one projection, 2007 they just decided it would be different? What do you mean? You can't do that. So there is nothing in the statute that says we can't start over with a different projection. Our experience in doing that led to a great deal of complexity and 7 years of litigation.
I can understand that. So, if for my purposes here, I might have different projections or want to look at other information, but that really is the basis that we started from the rest of this, and it's been going on for a year, and there's no sense to make it more difficult moving forward than it needs to be. So, but I did want to ask about the possibility of that. If, you know, if the economy really takes off, or if we're able to actually fulfill some things that we're hoping to do, we could see changes.
Councillor, I think good observation, and I think Chris answered the questions about the potential complexities in doing that. I will only add that this was more of a local decision, and the cities may jump in here, but the County Board of Commissioners, the previous Board of County Commissioners in 2007, did put in a local language into our comp plan that says the cities can ask for expansion of the boundary specifically for jobs. So it takes it out of that out of cycle to wait for 7 years. So that provision is in our code, just for jobs.
I see. Thank you. That's helpful information.
Also, if my memory serves me correctly, the board initially adopted one population and jobs projection, and then didn't they increase that?
Yes.
Last year during the process. So it has been considered a couple times and changed and modified, yeah.
Thank you for that.
Right. And finally, the cities is asking us to hold off in the board making that final decision, that there will be an opportunity to, as we come closer to the final, that we may make some tweak. And that tweak isn't going to be significant. I think the tweak is going to be based on, we're going to get some information on what our base population is. Because now this plan is going to be for the planning horizon 2015 to 2035. So we don't have the last, we don't have the 2015 base population.
Thank you. And just a final question. So coming back to the issue of rural land, if the county commissioners want to suggest an additional option, what is the process for that? I mean, first we have to agree on what we thought would be a feasible option. Would it require a new round of public hearings? Is there any latitude?
The cities would have to agree, yes.
I think it would certainly require a
some public process.
Public process, yes. And you say first we would have to agree on what it is. That might be the last, you know, after public process, your agreement might be the last thing, and hopefully that would be with the participation of all the stakeholders, and again, the rural people have not been shy in saying what they think about this up to this point, and I wouldn't expect them to be in the future, and they shouldn't be.
Okay, with that,
I guess I'll real quickly on that point.
Very quickly, because we're over time.
The public process to date for the councillors have selected the alternatives is limited to the work session and not been a public process. So
no, that's not
someone can make the case that that's yet to have a counselor motion on the existing.
Sir, that's so not true. We had four scoping meetings and two public open houses where we explained what it was, not only what the law requires us to do, but what the board directed us to do. And so I would say we've had, in addition to, I think this is our 16th work session with the board on this topic. So,
and with that, I understand there are some that want to make sure we get this right when it comes to inclusiveness and make sure that everybody's been heard. And we'll do what we can to maximize everybody's voice in this and the public process. I look forward to working very closely with you when it comes to bringing definition to that. And the next schedule needs to be defined. What's the next step based upon what we discovered here in the coming weeks?
That's correct, and with all due respect to my city partners, I don't know if they have any comment to make, so I'll leave that up to them. I heard Councillor Mielke ask that we have another work session. We will work with the commissioner's office to have that. I don't know what the purpose of that work session is, if it's going to be devoted to preparing a fourth alternative. I don't know yet, but I will probably consult with the county manager and work with the commissioner's office to set a date, and then what the purpose of the work session will be, and then I could also inform my city partners, so that they will be on page and everybody else has to be advertised. So I leave it up to the commissioners to determine when that work session will be and what it will be the focus of that. If it is examining potential for fourth alternative, I think some work needs to be done behind the scenes as to what that ought to be before we come to a work session. Otherwise, we won't be successful.
Exactly. There's much work to be done behind the scenes, and the right now the direction is paused. That February 4 date cannot proceed without making sure we have the opportunity to include the definitions of the fourth alternative to see whether or not we bring just make up.
So no release of the February 4 draft?
Well, if we release it, then I think it's very good that we release what we have, because the more exposure, the more openness that we have, the better. But we want to make sure we don't communicate the wrong thing and say, these are the ingredients of the cake, so weigh in on this, and so this is a public process, and there's assumptions that are made that it's locked in. So,
I don't know how you know that.
Remember, this is you gave us direction in terms of how to proceed, and we took that direction, and we said, what are the environmental effects of that direction? If you want to change direction, we've got to change how we portray the environmental effects. We don't want to do that more than once. So if you want to add an alternative, it would be my suggestion. Stop the presses, figure out what that is, communicate it to us. What we're going to need to do then is figure out not only the new schedule, but what are the ramifications in terms of the magnitude or the breadth of that new alternative, and it may have other considerations. So I'm hearing stop the February 4th date. I will call the consultants and tell them to wait for further instructions.
Sure, and I would assume that the consultants at this point have already completed the work and by when they release that. So the only thing they're holding is release of that.
That's correct. This is my review draft in anticipation of getting them comments back so they could put out the document in 2 weeks, the formal public issuance.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that.
Thank you. David, stop.